Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Leo Chenault in a four-point stance, digging in at left half. Carson Steele, a flip-bone set. They give a fake it to him and a quick pass. Right side, touchdown! Kansas City! Wanyama Morris! Big man, touchdown! Let him eat! And the offensive line deserves that drive and that TD. Wanyama Morris! A touchdown reception from Mahomes, and the Chiefs can take the lead.
Mitch, hold this on the call right here on your home for the Chiefs. 96.5, the fan, the thick six to Wanyama Morris. We're going to hear from him during the Chiefs Red Half Hour from the locker room and some of his thoughts on the touchdown celebration that he got from Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy, by the way. And, of course, what ultimately also happened in that game, which was Wanyama Morris coming in the final drive and one play on the drive prior to that, and playing left tackle for this team due to Kingsley's play. And that's where I want to start this hour. And you guys can chime in, as always, on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. This is Cody and Gold here on 96.5 The Fan. So week one, I thought Kingsley held his own. He was going up against a Ravens front.
Yeah, a couple snaps he won back, but okay.
They had Matabuke, but they didn't have someone like Trey Hendrickson. We acknowledged that on, I think, Friday going in. Like, hey, this is going to be a really good test for him. And in the first half, I actually thought Kingsley was fine. Second half, it was a disaster. Second half, it was a turnstile left tackle, and he just had no answer. No answer for one of the best defensive pass rushers in football. And ultimately, it prompted the Chiefs to kind of do what they did a year ago. You guys remember week two a year ago, that was because of penalties. But week two a year ago, they pulled Juwan Taylor out of the game, and they brought in a backup. And ultimately, Juwan Taylor the very next week was back and started the rest of the season. That was for penalties. I think the same thing is likely to happen here. Kingsley got pulled. He didn't have it that day. He didn't have an answer at this point in his young career, his second start in the NFL, going up against a pass rusher that there's maybe, what, three or four other guys max?
He finished with 17 and a half sacks last season,
right?
So he's a great pass rusher.
There's three or four other guys maybe all year you'll see, and you kind of learn from it. But Wanyama Morris had to come in that game, and he also had an illegal hands to the face penalty that at one point seemed like it was going to kill
their drive.
It almost
lost the game,
and it prompted the 4th and 16 as well. What'd you make of the Kingsley situation? Because I think, you know, Andy N post game said we'll see. You know, we'll step. Sometimes you have to take a few steps back to move forward, kind of thing. I don't believe suddenly Wanyama Morris is just going to be the starting left tackle, but they've got to know when they're going. Like, Matthew Judon is what, the best pass rusher that for the Falcons on Sunday Night Football. Matthew Judon is not Trey Hendrickson.
No.
So I think Kingsley should. I mean, if you think you draft him in the second round, I think Kingsley needs to be back out there on Sunday night.
You have no choice. Like, I'll just be honest with you. You've already lost some players to injury. We'll talk about Isaiah Pacheco's injury, which looks like it's likely to be probably the entirety of the regular season, just the same, depending on how the tests go out, as Hollywood Brown's, which all the reports this week are already saying that's the rest of the regular season. At the earliest, maybe he would come back for the postseason. You can't really be affording to be like, well, let's go see if Donovan Smith's still on the street. You just mentioned running back. There's a reason why nobody signed Donovan Smith.
Yep.
He's not on a team either. So, no, unless all of a sudden you're going to change course, which from day one of training camp, it was Kingsley Suamataia winning that job over Wanyama Morris. This is just a get your head right. The thing he was doing, and by the way, it was pointed out, funny enough, by Mitchell Schwartz before it was pointed out by Kingsley Suamataia, which is Kingsley's telling you, and Mitchell Schwartz and others, it's a technique problem. It's not a physical ability problem. He's dropping his arm, and it's causing this problem where those big, quick outside rushers like Trey Hendrickson can get around him with relative ease. But he was getting his ass kicked, and Andy did what the smart coach would do in the moment. You don't have it today. It's not going to work today. You're not going to get the out today, right? You're not going to get... And if you don't have it, if he's just going to run past you, well, then for the rest of these snaps, somebody else has to do the job so that we can figure it out on Monday, because we're still trying to win this game now. I actually thought it was a really bold call by Andy to pull him out the same as he did with Jawan Taylor. If you're going to make us lose today, you don't get to play the rest of the today. I still assume Kingsley be the start of the rest of the season. What? And then I hope that he improves based on what happened yesterday.
Going into the game, they clearly had not planned for it, but they were not getting any help. You know, Chip, they weren't leaving a tight end in or anybody anything like that to help him out. Now, maybe that's the adjustment initially. If there's a, they didn't do it in this game. They didn't feel like that was something that they could probably do in terms of getting guys open down the field. They needed, you know, receivers down the field. But that would be one solution. We've seen them do that before to help out a tackle that's struggling. In this game where they needed to pass the ball late, I think they didn't feel that that was going to be effective. And so they thought Wanya could do a better job. And he did until he had the illegal hands of the face penalty. So I think it is, as you pointed out, very important to remember all offseason who they viewed as the starter and all camp who they viewed as the starter. But he's got a lot to work on. He looked like a rookie, to say the least, out there in the second half in particular. I just think you went up against a top five defensive player in football, maybe at least at his position. You're not going to see that every week. Now, by the time you later on in the season, when you are going to face the Niners and you're going to play Joey Bosa and Fred Warner, all the guys like that.
Sure.
Yeah, hopefully you progress. That's the question. Did he learn from this? And typically Andy Heck, the Chiefs offensive line coach, is one of the best in the business. You see progression. I mean, hell, last year they worked with Jawan Taylor on some of his issues, and it got a little bit better as the year went on. With a rookie, you would like to think the canvas is more wide open for you to craft what you need to do with a player that's still pretty raw.
I would think so. I see the text line saying every team's got an elite pass rusher. Now, while I disagree with that sentiment, Trey Hendrickson has the second most sacks in the NFL since the start of 2023, second to only TJ Watt, last year's defensive player of the year. Now, he will have to face Khalil Mack, who has like the fourth most, Max Crosby, who has like the seventh most. Like, he'll have to face some of these guys we're talking about who are at the top of that list. But then after that, it's guys with half the number of sacks he's got over the last couple of years. The guys he has to avoid are the guys like Trey Hendrickson in style who can dominate a game because of the way that they play against Kingsley. To me, those guys are, we just mentioned Trey Hendrickson, they're guys like Danielle Hunter. They're guys like Aiden Hutchinson, where they're these big defensive ends with a ton of skill set that can come in there and either overpower you or beat you on the edge.
But you're going
to play. He's
going
to have to be better. Yeah, they're going to have to play a few of them.
Later in the season, the hope is that he can progress and learn from this, because later in December, they're going to play Danielle Hunter and the Texans. That same stretch, they're going to play T.J. Watt, who destroyed. I don't care how great you're. T.J. Watt's going to get his.
Jesus.
But yeah, that's terrifying to think about come December.
Two games in a row.
I would like to think he's going to progress. I think they should give him and will give him more opportunities to start. I don't think suddenly this is Wanye's job just because of what ended up being, what, seven plays, six plays at left tackle.
Well, and like you said, he had the hands to the face or whatever that almost cost him the game, too. So it's not like your backup option is. I mean, he had a penalty right in the way. It'll be interesting to see. Because I don't know snap-wise how much Aiden Hutchinson, for example, or Max Crosby rotate off of left tackle.
Most defensive linemen do. Hendrickson did yesterday because they moved him.
Because that was one of the things that was interesting. They moved him a little bit more than they normally do, but primarily he's stuck on that left tackle.
Especially once the second half hit.
A majority of the time. I don't know how much other run Kingsley's going to have against a guy like Max Crosby, but I think it's a good first test to kind of see where you're at least, to know where you need to get better at it. And it's not, look, I don't think Chiefs fans are wanting anything perfect, and he was getting exposed yesterday a little bit, but there's no reason to be overly concerned about it. I don't think right now.
Yeah. It's too early.
We'll see how he goes next week. We'll see how he goes the next couple of weeks. And if it's still one sack a game or a pressure here and there, then maybe it's more of a cause for concern.
It's still too early on that end of the panic. Aiden Hutchins, by the way, just had 4.5
sacks.
Yeah,
he was
in a single game
loss
against
the
Bucks.
They lost to Tampa.
He has 5.5 sacks 2 games into the season. He certainly looks like a guy who should have been taken in the top 2. But yeah, it's Kingsley was a late second round pick starting at left tackle for the most important team in the league. I think we all accepted he was going to have some growing pains, and I would say that Aiden Hutchinson gave him his welcome to the NFL
Hendrickson.
Game.
Yeah.
Trey Hendrickson gave him the welcome to the NFL game. Hey, kid, I know that you used to be pretty good at blocking where you were coming from at BYU. Doesn't work that way here in the big leagues. I can kick your ass. And so he taught him a lesson of, you're going to have to do things differently. And I'm sure he sat over there because in postgame, he was talking about the technique stuff he was running into problems with. So this has obviously been a coaching point from the very beginning. And when he stood on the sideline after getting benched by Andy Reid, I'll bet Heck came over to him or somebody else and said, here's what you're doing, and this is why you're losing. If you can fix it, then you'll be fine against guys like Trey Hendrickson because you're still plenty the athlete to do it. You have a technique problem. And because you're a young player who's drafted in the second round for a reason still, right? We can say all the time, like, someone might have had a first-round grade. Nobody chose to take him in the first round. They chose to let him be available all the way at the end of the second. Maybe because he needed some technique work. Who knows? But, like, I don't know. One game, I'm not going to bury the kid. He held up pretty good in the first game, and then Hendrickson just got the absolute better
one. It was great. He was great in the game.
People on the text line were mentioning, you know, scheming up a chip block or anybody to get in there. I think they might have had some of that, but I thought that at some point they might have really tried to help out Kingsley because he was having a hard go. Like, yeah. Trey Hendrickson was single-handedly almost wrecking the game. At one point, I thought that they would try to give him a little bit of help, whether it be P. Ryan or anybody in there.
Just became a bigger problem, actually. When you think about the injury, in a lot of ways, Pacheco is one of the people who would be asked to do that now, Gold, and now you're asking either a rookie on first and second down in Carson Steele, hypothetically, to help be the chip back on a passing play against a good defensive end, Gold, or you're asking Samaje Perine on third down, which I'm fine there. I'm comfortable with him doing that, but it's asking a bigger task. Their big question still comes back to, and I know we'll talk Pacheco again in a minute, but it adds another challenge certainly to it that they're in there. But yeah, I'm not losing it. Meanwhile, the other player who obviously everyone's freaking out about is Travis Kelce, because Travis Kelce has had the single slowest start to his NFL career, I would assume. And so as a result of that, people are worried that he's just washed. I will say I'm willing to give it a few more weeks, but I can't continue excuses much longer. Because in the first two games, he has been non-existent. Yesterday, could have made a simple pass, but if one hadn't been called back for a penalty, he has a 30-yard gain, and he came up 6 inches short of a touchdown. If he finishes with 51 yards for a touchdown and a win, do I lose my mind? No, that sounds good. But because those two things didn't happen, Gold, it just doesn't feel like he's being used in the offense as much. And I still wonder if that goes back to Hollywood Brown not being around. They're still going to pick on Travis Kelce until Xavier Worthy comes all the way around.
So he got open this game. I think that's the difference. Week one, I didn't feel like he was getting open. This week, he still didn't have the production. He had less production, as a matter of fact. But there were times where he was getting open. And in this game, you're right. It's amazing how much of a different vibe we're probably having and discussing his performance if he's not tackled inside that one. So we're saying, oh, he's got a touchdown all of a sudden. And yes, if that one play where she thought about pitching the ball as well wasn't called back.
He can't help himself, you know.
It wasn't called back, then yeah, maybe his stat line's different. But it is, I got texts from a few different people just that cover other teams. But obviously, everybody was watching this game. It was the prime game yesterday afternoon. And multiple people were all like, is this are people worried? Is this what he is now?
I think the second most receiving yards is tight end last
too
year.
Too early, to your point as well, too early to go ahead and flat out say, okay, well now he's only going to be a 500-yard guy this year or something. I think it's way too early. All it takes is on Sunday Night Football against the Falcons for him to have 95 yards and two touchdowns and everybody calms down. But yeah, it's something I think you got to watch, man. I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. What gave me a little more faith, though, was I felt he got open this week.
Yeah,
I didn't think
I
he was open. He wasn't targeted all that much, but I actually thought he got open this week, which was a good sign. And that ultimately, that is the sign to tell if he's still capable of that. And I think the answer is absolutely yes.
I think it looks completely different. I think people, like, if you're not going to panic about Kingsley, then you should. Like, Travis Kelce is a pro who's proven himself a million times over. Last year, he was hurt for 6 weeks to start the season and still managed to finish in the NFL second in receiving yardage and was an absolute force to be reckoned with against the best teams in the league, cruising all the way through the postseason. I think some of this is protecting him a little bit, even though he says he doesn't want to be protected. I think some of this is he just had a slow start. And I would worry, I guess, more about a slow start if that's not been the entire trend of the league. Patrick Mahomes, 151 passing yards. Every single quarterback in the league, sans Derek Carr, apparently, has had one of these games already in the first 2 weeks this year. The cover two and all this defensive stuff, it is caught up. Quarterback play looks depressed a little bit. All of it just kind of looks wonky in the early part of offenses, I think, in the NFL. And I think they're just also getting wrapped into that. And yesterday wasn't about Travis Kelce. It was about, before the injury, Isaiah Pacheco. They gave that man the ball more times than they normally do. Carson Steele got like 15, 20 snaps in addition to how much Pacheco got the ball. It was just more about the – they had four tight ends active. They were going to go heavy set. They're going to try to beat these people up. I didn't think Travis Kelce looked washed yesterday. He just didn't get a catch.
I think a lot of it
– one catch.
A lot of it is also mentioned people all across the country kind of had this narrative last year as well about
– Yeah, so they're just trying to pile
and
on
it was
now.
Last year like, oh, people tried to write him off in week 13, week 12 last year. And then we all know in the playoffs he looked like a Hall of Fame tight end again. Mm-hmm. It's 2 weeks in the season. It's something to watch, sure. But the fact that he was getting open was promising. Some of this is also just the betting and fantasy football world that we're in where, you know,
yeah,
people are used to. Yeah, we had our show parlay.
Over three.
We were
nailed
like, 50 and a half yards seemed pretty low. And you obviously
I'm going to bet it again this week, just to be honest, personally.
The other part is fantasy football has done this for a lot of star players. Like you're used to getting a touchdown or two a game. You're used to getting 70 yards. Like that's just part of the narrative that's out there. But if we're still sitting here 4 weeks from now and he's still, you know, getting 20 yards a game kind of stuff. Sure. I think that's a different conversation. Let's see what he does against teams we don't consider to be on paper heading in some of the better teams. You know, despite Baltimore and Cincy being 0-2, we thought those were two of the biggest challengers in the AFC. All right, now they're going to play the Falcons. They're going to play a Chargers team who might be undefeated, but nobody actually thinks they're going to factor in the AFC conversation. Maybe they will, but let's see. That's a much weaker defense and team overall. Let's just see how things progress as the schedule does ease up here over the next couple weeks for them.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just, I'll give it time. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time thinking there's no way. First, Anna Romo's done a nice job just individually suppressing some of Travis Kelce's stats because he's a very good defensive coordinator, so that's common. And in the first week, they've had multiple plays where it seems like it was going to Travis Kelce fall apart. Yesterday, it had been easy to see how Travis Kelce would have been targeted more. There's the one short pass, looks like it's going to go for 8 or 9 yards. That gets that little bit of weird spin on it because a fingertip touched it coming off the line. That was going to be open and goes to him. He's going after Travis on the interception before he misses the underneath guy. A different pass that was for 20, 30 yards was to Travis, gets called back on a penalty. If you're trying to tell me he didn't think Travis Kelce was getting open, you're wrong. He was definitely going after and targeting Travis Kelce. It was just one of those days where it didn't click and it didn't come together. And they, you know, other things were working instead. They got Rashee Rice on a deep touchdown for the first time in forever.
Trash of the day.
This one takes us to the airlines again. We've had a couple of these recently, and there's always some issues there, but it has to do with etiquette on a flight and a policy that I just assumed was there. There's people debating this on Reddit the other day as well. Also, some social media users on TikTok have shared their experiences of flying with passengers who have taken off their socks on commercial flights. Oh, no. Now, many airlines, including American Airlines, detail what's required of its passengers in its conditions of carriage contract. You're supposed to dress appropriately, which means bare feet or offensive clothing are not allowed. They also can refuse you just, you know, transporting you if you don't have your shoes on or socks on. Good, by the way, you do not need to have your socks off on a flight. This is disgusting. Unless you're a two-year-old or a one-year-old child, and for whatever reason you don't have socks on, there's no reason. This is disgusting. We've joked in the past about some people don't, you know, sandals on an airplane, which is one thing. Socks being off, barefoot. I wouldn't want to be barefoot on a plane anyway. You know how dirty airplanes are to begin with? The floor
correct.
And stuff. People have thrown up. All kinds of stuff. Who knows what bodily fluids are on airplane floors?
So sandals is like a half step. It's like being like part naked, right? I mean, your toes are still out. Your feet are still exposed for the world to see. But yes, it should be illegal to be barefoot in an airplane. They're just certain places, like same as a hospital.
There's
like, unless you're in the room being examined by a doctor and they're looking at your foot, keep your shoes on. This is a communal space. In the comfort of your own home, your own car, your own whatever, fine. But if I have to share a steel tube with you for the next 3 hours, you have to keep your socks on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that stinks for you, but that... for the rest of us, that's only fair.
So multiple U.S. airlines are allowed, or their policies to remove people if they're barefoot above the age of, Southwest Airlines, if you're above the age of five. Five and under?
Kids, whatever.
Above that, or if there's obviously a reason that you need to be barefoot. Like, you know, if there's someone with a disability, maybe that somehow requires you to need that or whatever that might be. But overseas, like Air Canada, Air France, British Airways do not have any rules listed. So if you're flying those airlines, they actually, you know, are not kicking you off the plane for going barefoot. It's just disgusting. We don't need to see your nasty feet there on the flight. Don't need to see it.
What's your stance? Then you think that they should stop flip-flops too?
No, I'm
stop a sandal.
No, I mean I've worn sandals on a plane before, but that's fine. It is what
you
it
better
is.
Better not put your feet anywhere near on the back of the chair.
Yeah.
I don't care if you got shoes on or not. Your feet stay down. Okay, this is not an up position situation. It doesn't get to go up on an armrest. You don't get to flip your hair on the backside of my chair. Keep your body parts, keep your feet, keep your hair in your small container. You want more space? Buy the big seat on Spirit or fly first class somewhere else. Don't be invading my space with your body.
It is funny that you mentioned, like, we're all good with sandals, but as soon as it gets to the bare feet, it's just there's another level of disgusting.
Dude, it's just
crazy.
Because I am now to assume that you never wear shoes under any circumstance in which your feet are essentially a walking cesspool. Like, at least if you're in sandals, the bottom of your feet have been protected through the middle of the airport, in your car, in your house. If you're willing to be barefoot on an airplane, you did not wash your hands when you left the bathroom. You have no cleanliness standards. You're a monster.
100%. I agree.
I just think you're, yeah, that's it.
Someone says they should provide temporary socks.
What, like,
or just wear your own socks?
What, like when you're trying, or whatever?
or like you're trying stuff on at the Payless back in the day?
One person on the text line
thing?
One person on the text line is very upset with us. Says they are an extreme claustrophobic, cannot wear socks and shoes for more than hours. You guys are bigots. You take
towards claustrophobia?
You take bleeps in public bathrooms, so what does it matter?
I wash my hands. I have shoes on when I'm in there. What do you mean?
In fairness, I also wipe the seat before I go to the bathroom as well. You know, jeez.
Wear socks at minimum on an airplane, please. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, by the way, yeah, the claustrophobia. I don't think claustrophobia applies to socks. I didn't know.
I
didn't know.
I have no idea.
I apologize for not being aware of that.
In fairness,
problem,
the policy we mentioned, it says if you have a disability, then, of course, that does not apply to said policy. But everybody else out there?
The American Disabilities Act exists for a reason. If that's your problem, then they'll take care of you.
Up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour, why the Chiefs are just inevitable at this point in the NFL.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Coming up in 25 minutes here on 96.5, we're going to hear from Andy Reid exclusively. I'm sure we'll get some official word on the Isaiah Pacheco injury if you're just joining us for the day. We talked about that already. Really tough to see. It looks like this is going to be something that could have him out for the rest of the season. Ian Rappaport reporting that it's a broken fibula. I'm sorry. So that's where things stand. And if, in fact, he needs surgery, which would be the expectation based on Rappaport's reporting, you could be not seeing Isaiah Pacheco in a Chiefs uniform the rest of the season. He was extremely emotional in the locker room. Some teammates were going up to him as well. So I hate to see that. He had a nice day yesterday, too. Really, really nice performance. But
He was a huge reason why they won.
I'm sure we're going to hear from Andy on maybe not the full, hey, is he done for the season? But he is reportedly set to go on IR, which means at least four games. But much like the Hollywood Brown scenario, that's not going to be when he's coming back.
Yeah, that's just, I mean, think about it. He's a running back in the NFL, and he broke his leg, you know, on the lower part of his leg, closer to his ankle. But, like, I don't know how long it would take you or I to recover from that. But just strictly speaking, medically speaking, how could we anticipate him being back that quick? And I just don't think that you can. It's a major injury for the Chiefs. And now for, I think it was Ross Tucker. Ross Tucker, who had told us right when we started, and you had asked him week one when he came on weekly, You said, what is, in your opinion, the single biggest thing that could stop the Chiefs from repeating as champions? And he said one thing. He said, injury. Injury. And now that feels kind of true. Where do you think Hollywood and Isaiah Pacheco would have ranked amongst the most important players on offense for this team this year? Fourth and sixth? Third and sixth? I mean, Isaiah Pacheco might have been second on this team last year as far as most important player on offense. Behind Patrick, well, third behind Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce? Like, at least for a stretch.
Well, last year he was part of the big three we kind of mentioned. I basically, it got so bad with other weapons that just focus on getting the ball to Rice, Pacheco, and Kelce. How often did we say that from probably week 10 on of last year's season? This year, you felt better because Rice seems to be an even better player. You thought Hollywood Brown was going to be available. Xavier Worthy, of course, in the opener at least gives you a lot of promise. And so now you fast forward, and with the injuries you have, your wide receiver room really is just the addition of Xavier Worthy and the subtraction of Kadarius Toney. That's all the wide receiver room is at this point. And then in the running back room, we know now where Pacheco at minimum is missing a huge chunk of the season, if not the whole season, it appears. You're down to Carson Steele, and maybe Clyde's available in week 5. We'll see. And Samaje Perine, who was a late addition to the team, who's more of a receiving back. So we'll talk more about this after Andy speaks, because we'll get even, I don't want to say more clarity, but we'll at least get official confirmation from the team. I doubt he's going to tell us an official timeline, but we might learn the exact injury confirmation. And he's going on IR. And maybe Burkholder, who, of course, was talking with Pacheco after the game when they did some of the initial testing yesterday. But this game yesterday, while there's some concern there at running back, while we acknowledge to start the hour, there's concern obviously with left tackle, with Kingsley getting pulled from the game. The Chiefs proved, though, yet again, because I think we've said this before during this current dynasty they're in, they're inevitable, man. There are plenty of games. This is not the first time where we said leaving a game, how the hell did they win? They had no business winning, but here we are. It's week 2 of the season, and it's different than last week with Baltimore. Like, Baltimore was very close, an inch away from tying the game and going for 2 or whatever and winning. But that one wasn't where you felt like, oh, the Chiefs were fortunate to win. They were fortunate to win yesterday because you lost the turnover battle. You had the left tackle get benched. You didn't even have 300 yards of offense. Patrick Mahomes had statistically
151 yards passing,
his lowest passing yards in a game in which he played a full game. And you lost time of possession. Another one of like the key, like obvious things you look at initially, and the trends usually don't bode well for you if you lose the turnover battle and the time of possession. And yet they still win. They get a 4th-and-16 conversion aided by a DPI. And then Butker does his thing. He's basically automatic. It's insane. At this point, you expect him to make every kick. That's what he's done for his career. He got a big extension this offseason, and he's already continued to back that up.
Well, and the league's gone that way. The league is now making like 85% of their kicks above 50 yards. That did not used to be the case. That used to be a sweat, but the most automatic kicker is Harrison Butker. I think what stands out about this is the Chiefs did a lot of shooting themselves in the foot, but so did Cincinnati. Like, in order to beat the Chiefs, you are also required to play a good, clean football game. You can't lose 15 yards because Ja'Marr Chase can't stop yelling at a ref. You can't fumble right after the Chiefs just gave you an acrobatic interception by Cam Taylor-Britt. You can't make those mistakes. You got to close out the game. You know, bury Joe Burrow a little bit. He had the ball with the lead and only like 3 minutes to go in the game, 4 minutes to go in the game. All he has to do is get 2 first downs and he can end the game for the Chiefs. He can leave with not enough time to even come back and do it. And the Chiefs gave them a little bit of a favor by letting some of that time run off by calling, like not allowing for the penalty, calling for the penalty, letting another play in the clock to tick. So they opened up the door for you to just go out there, get a couple of first downs and end the game, and you couldn't do it. So the problem is with the Chiefs is they can play a sloppy game and beat you way more often than you can. So unless you're planning on playing mistake-free football, you better take advantage of every single thing they screw up in a game. Because, in a game where Travis, if you had told me before the game on Friday that Travis Kelce had 1 catch for 5 yards, the Chiefs turned the ball over 3 times to just 1 turnover, and Patrick Mahomes finished the ball with 151 yards gold, I'd have told you they lost by 3 touchdowns. 2 touchdowns. I'd told you they got their ass kicked, and they won.
Yeah. How many times have we said that the Chiefs just, you know, you played poker on Friday. How was that, by the way? And you, the Chiefs have more.
I broke even. Didn't really win or lose.
Just to keep with the poker theme. They have more outs. We've said this before.
Way more.
The Chiefs have more outs than any other team
in
the NFL.
Straight draws, flush draws.
They just do.
Doesn't matter.
Did you win?
I lost exactly, not kidding, $4. What a waste. Somebody won. The maximum someone won was like $450. They had a great night. Okay. So some other people definitely lost.
Anybody we know?
Yeah. A friend of mine, David Leskey, who you're
familiar
with.
Yeah. I was just curious.
Congrats to him. He was the big winner.
It reminded me because we've said it before. It's not the first time we've used the poker analogy with this team because truly they just have more ways, more outs, however you want to describe it.
More creative ways to win.
Win football games. And that's what it takes sometimes to go on these runs and to be consistently a 10-plus win team under your head coach and maybe a number one seed this year. They certainly have tiebreakers over two teams that could have been at one point, not anymore, I don't think, could have been in the conversation for number one seeds. And yeah, as far as the tight end stuff, I mean, on the flip side, you mentioned Kelsey, but on the flip side, if there was a concern defensively right now, it is 2 weeks into the season. Isaiah Likely, super athletic. I thought, okay, that's
he'll take advantage, but
that's something that you're not going to see very often. Well, Drew Sample on the first drive, and then really it was Gesicki the rest of the game, but their tight ends carved the Chiefs up. And that has happened now, and now you're going to face Kyle Pitts on Sunday?
I don't think it matters the tight end right now. I'll just be... Because it wasn't just Gesicki.
What's the numbers right now on tight
Sample
ends against the Chiefs?
Sample and Eric Ault Jr. was getting things done. Like, every single tight end ate them up in that game. I think Nick Bolton was fine, I guess, in that game. I still didn't think he played particularly well. I think I was most frustrated by letting Joe Burrow stand you up for a minute long enough for the offensive lineman to come pushing everybody in the back and get the first down. I think he could stood up by Joe Burrow, but it's fine. He wasn't great in coverage, but that's not his strength. What the hell happened to Justin Reed in this game? I understand he was coming in and out with the injuries and those things.
Yeah. Both hands. He was asked about his hands. Both hands were banged up, I think. Yeah.
So I'm not saying, and that of course did happen, and that was certainly a factor in it, but he was getting, like, a tight end. Gesicki dropped a pass that would have been for another 20 on him. So Gesicki dropped a pass. He fell down on the big gain on the very first drive of the game. He was getting cooked all night by tight ends. The bigger concern for me is, I thought they had some safeties to maybe cover this, and that's what it seemed like they rotated their plan to. Hey, maybe we don't just make Nick Bolton cover every tight end that comes out of the backfield, and instead they switched it over to Justin Reed. It did not go better. It went equally as bad, maybe worse. And so that part really stinks. It's currently their defensive Achilles heel. I will say, though, they didn't really give up that much points for an offense to put them in a bad spot multiple times. I didn't think, outside of that, since he couldn't run the ball, Ja'Marr Chase didn't exist. They got plenty of pressure on the quarterback. It was just tight ends. If that's the only problem, I don't know. I'd probably sort that out.
Well, because once again, we saw, as we expect now from Chris Jones, but you could double team him. It's not a sure thing that the double team's working, to say the least. Early on in that game,
he got after him.
Chris Jones went right through the double team.
And Carter Olsen struggled.
And it wasn't a problem for him. I mean, Chris Jones looks great here early going. I know it's not like he has a ridiculous sack total or anything like we've seen from some other guys, but he is such a disruptor. Even the sack, I guess, would have been Karloftis got in the second half. It was because Chris Jones kind of collapsed the pocket and it allowed Karloftis to get the sack, which we've said time and time again.
Hey, be the cleanup guy. Who cares? Like, if you're Karloftis, you're not complaining about cleanup sacks because Chris Jones has been an absolute forced to be reckoned with for the first two games of the season.
Got a sack and a half, but he's been better than that, if that makes sense.
Oh my, so much. Are you kidding? So much better than that. The sacks are not telling a story on Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Chris Jones is a one-man wrecking crew. Like, if you watch Trey Hendrickson, Cincinnati is saying the same thing, I'm sure, on Cincinnati radio this morning. Like, the hell are we supposed to do about that guy? Baltimore was definitely saying that after their game. But yeah, they can't guard tight ends. I'll be the first to admit, and it's still too early to know for sure, maybe I underestimated the loss of Willie Gay Jr. in coverage. I thought they could cover it. I thought between safeties and other athletic linebackers like Chanel, they would find a way to figure out the coverage gaps that Willie Gay was doing for this team really well last year in a Super Bowl winning year. Because right now, his absence is being felt more than L'Jarius Sneed's somehow. Willie Gay's coverage ability against tight ends is noticed in these first two games because they haven't been able to guard anybody.
I saw Willie Gay front and center there at the Saints locker room because they of course have a big upset against the Cowboys, and we all know he has a huge personality, right? Big energy guy. That's one thing was fun here in Kansas City for him. And front and center in the Saints locker room celebration yesterday on Instagram Live or whatever, of course, was Willie Gay. So they definitely missed that. And I think it's something to watch. I mean, the tight ends have been problematic. The one thing I wonder, how many times we mentioned with Spags' defense as the season progresses, right? As games progress, usually even within them, they typically make adjustments and get better. And so let's fast forward here in a couple weeks and see if the tight ends are still a problem. Or are we going to be sitting here in week 7 and say, hey, remember when we were the first 2 weeks of the season talking about how tight ends were getting the best of the Chiefs? Let's see what the pivot, let's see what the adjustment is 2 weeks now of tight ends getting the best of the Chiefs. I also wonder a little bit, like, hey, it's frustrating, I think, as a fan to see tight ends wide open kind of here, 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards. When you get down towards the red zone, though, they were able to buckle down. So I'll be curious to see over the next couple weeks what that does.
Ironically, week 7, they face the 49ers, who have George Kittle. To give you some of the tight end rundowns, Kyle Pitts, they have next. I don't know who the Chargers tight end is, sorry. Taysom Hill, Saints.
Parnum.
Kittle.
I don't remember.
Kittle and Bowers. And Bowers / Mayer. So, I mean, they're going to go up against some good tight ends.
Yeah, we'll see. The text line points out the thing that we know, which is the Chiefs are very good, and under Spags, at making adjustments.
Yep.
If this is their problem now, I can't look you straight in the face, go and be like, you know what? I don't think Spags will ever figure out how to guard tight ends. Something tells me they'll figure it out. By the time week 17 rolls around, they will have decided on a coverage that they can use most of the time, even if the personnel doesn't align. Do I think tight ends is what will get picked on them the most? Do I think if you have a fantasy football team and you got a backup tight end and they're going against the Chiefs, you should start them? Yeah, probably. Do I think it's going to cost them games? No. Not currently, or at least by the end of the year, I certainly don't think it will.
But I'll say Isaiah Likely is the exception because there was missed tackles on the long touchdown that he had, we know, on that Thursday night game a week ago. Generally speaking, the tight end's usually not capable of the 60-yard touchdown that Ja'Marr Chase could be capable of, that Drake London, I guess, for this week, if we want to use him as an example, that later on in the year, a Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk is. I guess if I'm picking my poison, would I rather us be sitting here saying, man, the corners have had no answer for the wide receivers, or would I rather be saying, hey, the tight ends are getting the best of them in the middle of the field? I'll take the tight end issue that I hope they can correct versus, man, yeah, the wide receivers are just burning all the corners. That has not been the case.
It was really interesting, yeah, too, because it wasn't even Justin Reed either. Drew Tranquil missed a tackle in the backfield on Mike Kosicki. Quinn Cook had a moment where...
I don't even know who the hell that is.
Or Cook. Who's that?
Brandon Cook?
Brian.
Oh, Brian. Oh, sorry. Brian Cook. Sorry. I was like, Quinn Cook. I was confused.
Quinn Cook. I was thinking the NBA. Sorry.
Got it.
Brian Cook lost Kosicki as well. I mean,
they had a bad game.
Mike Kosicki's not Isaiah Likely, but he's one of the more athletic tight ends where you can compare Kyle Pitts maybe to him. I don't know if George Kittle fits athleticism. Brock Bowers faces athleticism. So when facing the athletic tight end, that'll be interesting to see that storyline where they go through Pitts, Bowers in particular with the Raiders.
I think they'll solve it eventually. I think a lot of it is just it is their weakness right now on defense. But I would also say at the moment, it's their only weakness. Like, I mean, is there a different weakness I'm missing? Like, they're not getting beat up in the run game. They're not getting beat up by opposing wide receivers.
2 weeks in.
They're getting pressure.
One of the biggest adjustments so far 2 weeks in compared to a struggle where they were one of the bottom 8 teams against the run, I think it was, yards per carry, has been what you just said. I mean, against the run, they've got up against Derrick Henry, and then now look, Chase Brown and Zach Moss, not exactly the best running back room in football by any means, but still, they have done a nice job against the run in the early going. They're going to go up against Bijan Robinson coming up on Sunday. Yeah. Let's see what the Falcons look like tonight. They're playing the Eagles.
Kamara coming up too.
Yeah, so we'll see. They'll have some bigger tests along the way, but right now it looks early on, you know, where they're worse against tight ends 2 weeks in, they're better against the run 2 weeks in. My guess is it balances out as the season goes on.
Yeah, I would think so. But again, teams are going to, and it also depends on, I think teams have come out swinging a little bit more, thinking they were going to have to play more keep up with the Chiefs this year. I think teams had gone to the ground over the last couple of years against Kansas City because they could, because they knew that this was going to be a lower scoring affair in which this rock fight will be a part of versus, you know, it kind of varies a little bit based on where they are scoring wise. And now with no Hollywood Brown and no Isaiah Pacheco, teams might start going to the ground more against Kansas City. But also, like, teams keep making the same mistake. I don't understand why the Ravens didn't run a little bit more Cincinnati tried, but they keep using the worst of the two running backs. Just bad decision making.
Yeah.
Chase Brown is averaging like 8 yards a carry this year, and they let him touch it 4 times a game. And they just let Zach Moss's old ass run instead. Some teams just aren't good at making the decisions that come along with that. So some teams are going to forget to use their tight end too and be like, oh, you know what? Looking back on it, I wonder if using our tight end would have helped. I think it'll get solved by the end of the year. I feel pretty good about it. Well, you know, feels good. 2-0. Look at all this. We can talk about who I was on to later. It'd be good.
Someone from the 816 texted in 913-586-7965. They said, does the 0-2 start for Baltimore and Cincy mean they're out of the number one seed race? Yes. They have to play each other. Yes. They're 0-2 in conference play. Yeah. I think the number one seed conversation now is down to Kansas City, Buffalo, and Houston. That's it. I don't think there's any other team in the AFC you should be worried about getting a number one seed. It is Kansas City's to lose, in my opinion, anyway. But then it is Buffalo with how they've looked, their start, and it's the Houston Texans who are also 2-0, and the Chiefs will play both those teams later on in the year. Seems like those might be some pretty big football games in November and December when they're playing Buffalo and they're playing the Texans. So, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest development truly from a long season perspective. Yeah, Baltimore and Cincy probably still find a way to either at least one of them, if not both, make the playoffs. But number one seed, yeah, that's toast.
Why not? Over on Twitch says, well, you're going to dismiss Harbaugh and the Chargers?
Absolutely.
You're eliminating.
You guys aren't worried about the Steelers
with the Chargers?
The Steelers, absolutely. Look, the Chargers have had a soft schedule to start. It continues until they play Kansas City. Credit to them, J.K. Dobbins looks
fresh.
Incredible.
He looks fresh.
Great. He does.
He's doing front flips into the end zone yesterday.
He does. But as we sit today,
it's not just another day. It's today.
I am still not concerned about the Chargers.
Yeah, we can talk about
it. Until they beat the Chiefs, I would not be concerned either, yeah. Which I don't think that's going to happen.
Poverty franchise.
I think they're going to start however many games they play till, what, 4-0? Would that be 4-0, 3-0? And then they'll play Kansas City.
Also, it'll be a really big game, actually.
Yeah. If the Chiefs don't get the number one seed, and you let me pick any team right now that has a chance to do it, please let it be the Steelers. Are you kidding me? Love nothing.
They're not. Don't. Cody.
Fantastic.
Cody.
News.
They're not getting.
Oh, no. Not Justin Fields or Russell Wilson.
Mike Tomlin, man. Ooh. I don't know how he does it.
There is no way. Look, they might make the playoffs again because it's freaking Mike Tomlin. He's a great coach.
He's a great
doing
coach.
Doing it with Justin Fields, who doesn't look any different than he did in Chicago. They just have a great defense, and TJ Watt destroys opponents. And their schedule. Turns out, we'll find out the Falcons tonight, pretty soft schedule. They played the Falcons week one. They just played Bo Nix and the Broncos. So let's keep schedule in mind a little bit with the Steelers. There's no chance that they end up winning 12 games or 13 games. No way. What's now when Justin Fields is your quarterback? You know, they won these games, what, 6 field goals in week one. They just scored 16 points or something like that against the Broncos. No. Against bad teams and average teams, that defense is going to win them a lot of games, which is why they'll be in that 8-10 range again. But they're not getting to the 11-plus win range with the current offense that they have.
No.
That'd be stunning.
That would be not going to happen.
Yeah.
We can talk more about some of the other quarterbacks later.
Up next, we're expected to hear from Chiefs head coach Andy Reid, exclusively here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. I'm sure we'll get an update on Isaiah Pacheco. The only place you can hear from Andy Reid on a Monday is coming up next right here on 96.5.